You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. Leaving work in a mood? Time to change that with Overdrive.
You're convinced they're so dangerous.
They'll kick and bite. I think they bite and kick. Like, I believe, though. I don't want to speak out of turn. But
great outdoorsman here. Because a pony will bite your face.
I'm telling you, I feel like a pony would bite.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Big one in Boston tonight. Raptors, Celtics, you can hear it right here on TSN Radio. And the Raps got a pretty good buffer on these guys. They're seven games up, and I don't think Boston has a shot at catching the Raptors over the final 37 games. But the way things shake out, the Raps end up with that top seed, and Boston continues to sputter a little bit like they have really all season.
Right.
I think at the start of the year, we thought there's a good chance these two teams meet in the Eastern Final.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen. You know, you're going to see this team in the second round if Boston gets through the first round. And I still think they will. They're too talented. They're going through a bit of a rut right now.
Right.
But the Celtics are a good team. But this gives the Raptors an opportunity, you know, to
kind of, like, almost say
put
goodbye.
Them completely
yeah, like
in
say
the
goodbye.
Room. Sometimes a win tonight and it's over. They're not catching you. There's no shot.
Right.
And psychologically, you know, they've played two tough games. Raps beat them at home early in the season by 12, I think it was. The one in Boston a month and a half ago, went to overtime. Kyrie Irving went off for like 45 points. But there have been close games, and Boston plays up to the competition. Yeah. They don't play down to the competition when they're playing quality teams. So, you know, the Raps are going to be in for it tonight. I think the Celtics are aware of that. We'll catch up with Jack Armstrong live from Boston here in just a moment. Paul McLean coming up later in the hour. The former NHL head coach, assistant coach, longtime player. Get his take on what he thinks Randy Carlyle is going through right now. A guy he knows personally. He worked with Randy a couple of years ago in Anaheim. Yeah. And get his take on the league in general. I mean, this is a guy played a long time, was a really good player, good coach.
Coming up on the trade deadline, there's just so many things that you can throw at somebody like that because he's kind of seen and done it all.
Well, we'll ask him about Jake Gardner, if he's ever been in a situation where he felt like a fan base turned on him at all, or there was a segment of the fan base, what that would be like. You know, he played in Canadian cities, and, you know, the Jake Gardner stuff, I give him credit. He came out and he spoke again today. He spoke after the game a couple of nights ago, and Gardner was at practice today, and he came out and he spoke again.
I think it'll blow over. I really do. I think in looking back at just kind of the vitriol, and it seems like this was more situational.
Go out and have a couple good games in the
road.
Exactly.
I think people move past it pretty quickly, unless it lingers. Now he has the opportunity to control that because you play better, and you know the people won't let you know their displeasure. That's pretty much it.
Well, I agree with that, but he's still going to make mistakes.
Well, for sure.
You know, like that's I'm with you, and everyone's saying that you got to play better. Yes, you got to play better, but at some point, Jake Gardner is going to make another big mistake.
But
you play in the NHL as a defenseman in 22 minutes a night, you're going to get burned from time to time.
But that's where do you sense that people are like, there you go, like. It's almost like there's the target on his back. Like somebody else can make eight mistakes, but Jake makes one. He's like, see, I told you, he's no good.
Likely that would happen. You know,
with a like, small...
I can't picture another guy on the team right now that is overly polarizing. You know, like they're... Because they've gotten rid of the whole band that was here for the meltdown in Boston and for Salute Gate and all that kind of stuff.
Dion
all the dark
Phil
years.
And...
I mean, Kadri was a part of it, but Nazem Kadri... I don't think he's never been as polarizing. I think the majority of Leaf fans, you know, love him and love what he represents. And he plays with some jam. And this town's always, you know, it's kind of a white collar town, but it appreciates blue collar players.
William Nylander held out and got paid.
Nylander could be the next in line. Like, and I'm not trying to advocate for it. I'm just wondering aloud, you know, who is the most likely second target? Because if you asked me before that game, who's the most likely to be booed, I might have said Nylander because of how much talk has been going on. But I think if I took a step back and really thought about it in terms of something that's like deeply rooted, it was always going to be Jake Gardner.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because of game seven. He's been here for 8 years.
Yeah, so there's been lots of sample size to judge.
To pick away at it. And people made up their mind 5 years ago on him.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I just... Like I say, I think he is what he is, and that's kind of what the league has shifted to. We had one caller there yesterday, I can't remember, I think it was maybe that Nick, that said, You know, Scott Stevens and all that. The game's gotten away from that. You need skating defensemen that can distribute the puck. I think the challenge for Jake Gaarder, and this comes back to systematic play, this is Babcock, this is his partner, is to limit the mistakes and how he recovers from them. And that is, in today's world, the National Hockey League. You know, I can go to any team you name. I can name you a defenseman that's probably polarizing on that team that a fan base is frustrated with. But you can interchange them, because I don't know how many times I've talked to other fan bases and they're like, okay, you know what? You don't like Jake Gaarder? You can have Chris Tanev. You can have this player.
Everyone's got a whipping board.
Because there is somebody
there that
seems to have that. So it's,
yeah.
I think it'll move on. I think they got to have a good Florida trip. That would be nice.
And then back to back Tampa tomorrow, Florida on Friday night.
Yep.
You know, it's not going to be easy. Tampa's the best team in the league.
Yeah.
And Florida.
Florida's struggling.
Yeah. They're out of it. They're done. You know, they're not. They don't have a shot, I don't think, at making a run or anything. But as for the game tonight, you can hear it right here on TSN 1050. Raptors, Celtics. We've been pointing this out all afternoon. Whoever plays at home wins.
Yeah.
You know, in recent years, when these two teams meet up, if it's in Toronto, the Raptors are going to win. If it's in Boston, the Celtics are going to win. Is there a chance that changes tonight? Could the trend potentially take a right turn? Let's head down to Boston and catch up with our TSN Raptors analyst, Jack Armstrong. How you doing, Jack?
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
We're doing well. I mean, what is up with this? I mean, I guess that's the NBA in a nutshell, maybe pro sports in a nutshell. When you're at home, you're more comfortable and you feel good. You got the crowd behind you. But over the past 3 or 4 years, generally speaking, whoever's playing at home, when it's Celtics, Raptors, they're going to win the game.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a big element of pro sports, and particularly in the NBA, because there's so many dynamic plays and plays that change momentum, so many scoring chances that, you know, affect, you know, how guys feel and the emotional highs and lows. And the crowd can really have a difference in terms of motivating a home team and intimidating the three officials. And, you know, when you look at the Celtics, everybody's talking about how much they're struggling. I mean, they're 1-5 in their last six on the road. But by the way, they're 6-0 in their last six games at home. So as much as they're struggling, and they've lost three in a row, all those losses came on the road, and they're one of the best home teams in the NBA. So I think the Raptors are facing a game tonight where, you know, you're playing a wounded animal. There's a lot of questions here in Boston about just how good this team is, and there's some finger pointing going on, a lot of different elements to it. So to me, I think tonight, for the Raptors to come in here, they're going to have to play really, really well to have a chance to win.
With all that concern and debate and drama down there, does this mean that Brad Stevens is no longer the greatest coach in the history of pro sports, or what?
Well, in my opinion, I think the guy's a great coach. When you go to two straight Final Fours and two straight NCAA championship games at Butler and you don't cheat, you're a pretty good
allegedly,
coach.
Jack, allegedly.
Oh, no. I know the guys that are doing it, and I know the guys that aren't, and he was one of the guys that wasn't, and he's like, to me, he's like I think he's a terrific coach. You know, they used to say it about Don Shula. He can take his and beat yours. He can take yours and beat his. I think that highly of Brad. I think he's one of the great coaches we have, not only in the NBA, but in our overall sport today. I think you talk to coaches at every level, and I think he's widely praised. And, you know, I think right now what he has is a challenge on his hands, and that is sometimes you could have too much talent, and you only have one ball, and it's the process of trying to figure out how everybody can play in the same sandbox. And it's a team sport, and trying to get guys with different agendas and you know, people pulling them at them in terms of the number of shots they take and the points they score and all that, which is all selfishness, as a coach, you have to fight through all that and get guys to get convinced that, you know, it's all about what's good for each other. And that's the challenge. And the beauty of this is, in spite of the fact that they're in fifth place in the East, you know, a good stretch, and they could get themselves right in the hunt for a 2 or 3 seed. So I still think they have the most talent of the five top teams in the East. The question is, they're of the five, they're playing least like a team of those five.
Do you think that buy-in you mentioned, Jack, how much different or difficult is it in today's game than back in your day coaching? Or, I mean, it's a different world out there. Guys just want contracts, money, shoe deals. It must be a lot more difficult to get guys to buy in for that ultimate goal.
It's hard to coach. It really is. You're right. I mean, it's incredibly hard because you have, you know, I call it the gatekeepers. They're the ones that screw the league up, and not just our league. I mean, you know, you look at the Major League Baseball, the NFL, NHL. There are so many secondary figures, you know, the agent, then you know, the marketing rep and the social media rep, and you have all these secondary type figures with teams that are constantly building walls, and people really aren't able to get true to the true essence of the athlete, and there's so many people putting walls up between them and the people that really matter, and that's the basketball people, the hockey people, the football people, the baseball people, to really impart their wisdom and lessons on these guys, that you got a lot of clueless people that have selfish messages that don't know anything about what it's like to be on a team and be part of that, that really screw these guys up. And I'm not pointing this out as if it's a Celtic thing, or it's a general thing in pro sports. And I think it's a true challenge when you're trying to really build today. And I think as a coach or as an executive today, as much as you want to recruit, retain a player, there are times too that you have to have healthy conflict to get guys to understand that, hey, it's still about the brand, the name of the team, and the team you play for, not you.
With Jack Armstrong, our Raptors analyst, Raptors Celtics in Boston tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. You know, all of these teams, 29 teams in the league, fighting to achieve even just a minor amount of success that Golden State has managed to pick up and have over the past 4 years. And then you watch the way they play last night, you know, and you mentioned that coaching. It's one thing to worry about your own guys. Then you got to look at this team. They scored 51 points in the first quarter last night. 51 in the first quarter. 10 three balls in the first quarter last night. Like, you know, I know it comes up every few weeks whenever we talk, Jack. We don't discuss it all the time, but, you know, as a guy in a city where there's a really good team, and you're in another city where there's a really good team in Boston, and there's a few other really quality teams, but what are we talking about here? Like, if Golden State gets rocking and Boogie Cousins is back in a week or two, who's going to really compete with them?
Well, the good thing is the Raptors and the Celtics are in the East. All they got to worry about is being the last man standing in their conference. And then they got seven games on the biggest stage of all to try to maybe, you know, unseat the champion, which is all you ever wanted to begin with. I think it's a whole lot different out West. I mean, look at the Denver Nuggets. They've had a great year. And Mike Malone, their coach, has done a fabulous job with a lot of injuries. They've been the number one team out there for pretty much the whole year. An outstanding team on both ends. And they got dismantled at home. Nobody does that to Denver, particularly at altitude. People come in, and they hit the wall, you know, usually 8 minutes into the game. Instead, you know, as you mentioned, 51 points. They made 10 threes. It looked like the varsity playing against the JV.
No kidding.
It was absolutely shocking. You know, you mentioned Cousins. He's a phenomenal talent. He's high maintenance, a load to deal with. He could either come in there and put them over the hump and make them unbeatable, or he could be a guy that's a combustible personality that creates more complexity to what their season has been. But I think when you look at them, we all know they're the best team. We all know they're the most talented and the most skilled. And if they get it all together, they're awfully tough to beat. On the other hand, if you're Toronto, you've beaten them twice already. You got to feel pretty good. Even if you play him again, that would be in June. I'll sign up for that right now, and I'll take my chances with that.
Well, everybody would. I hear you. And listen, I'm all for it. It would be the greatest run and greatest season in Raptors history, even if they got swept in the final. The fact that they got to a final would be an incredible achievement. I can't help but have that defeatist attitude. It's the truth. I watch this Golden State team, and the thing is about Boogie, you're right, Jack. But because of the contract, if he comes in and he's a pain in the ass, they'll just say get out of here. They'll cut him. He'll be out. I don't think he's going to be in a position to be a diva. And I think it sets up perfectly for them because he's been around the team rehabbing the whole year. So he knows them. He's going to likely know where he kind of fits in. They're going to ease him in with minutes. And if it's a problem, there's no commitment. It's a one-year deal at like $5 million or whatever. They'll just tell him, there's the exit. Get the hell out.
Yeah, no, I mean, and they have guys that, you know, can kind of run the room a little bit.
Right.
Above and beyond Steve Kerr. I mean, they have, you know, guys like Durant and Curry, Klay Thompson in particular, three guys. You know, Draymond Green could be a little as combustible as he is, but the other three guys I mentioned, and then you have guys like Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala, all really good pros. And they have a few other guys as well on their team that I think are really good guys, good pros, that, you know, a lot of times overwhelm a guy like that. When you're the sore thumb and you're a bit of a knucklehead and the rest of the guys are doing the right thing, you really stand out poorly. So I do think there'll be a lot of good positive peer pressure there to get him to line up. And again, that's why by far they're the best team. But I'll say this, the Eastern Conference semis and the Eastern Conference finals, I think the competition that the five teams in the East have to play when you get to the final four teams and the East championship, I think will be tougher than what the Warriors are going to have to go through in the West semis and the West finals. I really believe that the dogfight of whoever gets to the final four spots in the East in the last two playoff rounds will be absolutely brutal.
I'm with you on that. More depth at the top. Enjoy it in Boston tonight, Jack. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
Guys, stay warm. Have a great night.
Yeah, we're trying. Jack Armstrong, it is windy.
It is awful out.
It's not that cold, like the base temperature, but the wind.
The wind is blowing right through, and there's some snow flying around, too.
It's supposed to be a lot of snow all weekend. It's supposed to be freezing.
That's no good.
No, that's not good.
I thought it had to be around 0 or 1 or 2 under to snow.
Fake news.
It is fake news.
Because they're saying on CP24 it's going to be minus 12 or minus 13 all weekend. It's supposed to snow all weekend.
I always thought when it was that cold, too cold to snow.
Add that to the poll. We got to update the poll question.
70-pound horses.
The dumbest statements made on this show.
We've made a lot.
Yeah, listen, I don't want to... I hate to come off as sounding defeatist, but Golden State... When all said and done, they're going to own every offensive record ever, like anything of substance. They already got the most wins of all time. They've got three titles. I think they end up with a fourth this year. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson are going to run away with three-pointers made and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Highest scoring teams.
I think Steph Curry's already third.
He is third. He just, I think this past weekend or last week, he moved into three. And he's chasing, I think, Reggie and Ray Allen, I think it is. He'll blow past them in the next couple of years. But Jack is right, though, about, you know, the depth atop the Eastern Conference. After Golden State, there are some good teams. You know, Denver's okay. Houston, if they stay healthy and Harden keeps playing like he's not human, they can probably put up a fight. Oklahoma City's got, you know, a couple of high-end players, obviously. But Golden State is just... They're a different animal.
They're another level.
They're another level, and with Boogie Cousins... It's a potential for another ingredient that other teams that maybe could match up in the paint, maybe somehow if you slow it down into a half-court game,
right?
You know, where he adds that much more to their repertoire. And if he is a problem, they'll just be like, you're out. Yeah. We haven't played with you all year, and we've already got, you know, a 30-14 record. We don't need you. We paid you to give the opportunity to rehab and maybe,
yep,
you know, move you into the lineup if you're a good soldier. And you don't act like a diva in a pain.
If not,
we'll keep you around.
Take a lap.
If not, you're out.
What would you prefer as a nickname? Boogie or Booger?
Boogie.
I think Boogie.
Boogie every day of the week.
Booger was from Revenge of the Nerds, wasn't that? There was a guy named
Booger McFarlane.
Booger McFarlane is the most, you know, notable one in today's.
How do you get that name?
I don't know.
Do you pick your nose in a booger? I mean,
I don't know. I always figure it's like a something, you know, the dad is, it's like a junior kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, instead of junior, Chaz. You're Booger. And,
it's Chaz.
Yeah. So
I met a Chaz at the ski chalet.
I know. We discussed this on Monday.
So, Raps Boston tonight, and it should be a great game. You know, for the most part, Valanciunas not healthy. A couple of guys banged up a little bit, but the big dogs on both teams are going to be ready to go tonight. You can hear that on TSN 1050. We'll get back into the Leafs and what went down at practice earlier today. A big game in Vancouver. Two potential wildcard teams fighting it out. Vancouver,
Duking it out.
And Elias Pettersson will not be playing this evening, but he's coming back soon. And we'll get into what's going on in Anaheim. Winless in 12.
That's a long time,
dude. Real ugly. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Paul McLean will join us here in a moment. Jack Adams winner back in 2013. Longtime head coach, assistant coach, player. Frank's Red Hot wants to add a kick to your football party this February. Text the keyword Frank's and your name to 105050. Frank's and your name to 105050, and you could win 53 bottles of Frank's Red Hot and $2,500 cash to spend on your party any way you want it. Visit tsn1050.ca for details. I would be like Kramer in this circumstance. If I was like dealing with some sort of potential lawsuit and I was working on a settlement with Frank's Red Hot, and I was in the front, it was in their office,
like,
and they
I'll take it.
We'll offer you 53 bottles of Frank's Red Hot. I'd jump. Be like, I'll take it. I don't even need the cash. But in this circumstance, you get cash too. So Frank's in your name to 1050-50.
You just love that hot sauce, don't you?
I had it earlier this afternoon.
Really? What do you put it on? Chicken?
I put that on everything, man. I put it on chicken. I put it on pizza sometimes.
Really?
A little sauce on a pizza. Not all the time, but every once in a while.
That's a
bit
aggressive.
Just to spice it up.
I've been asked the last couple times I've ordered pizza, do you want some oil? I'm like, people are putting like spicy oils on their pizzas now?
I haven't been.
That's maybe like an Italian.
That's probably
like
a
you're probably at like, yeah, you're at a high end spot.
Dude, I just want pepperoni, mushrooms. That's it. No goofy stuff on the pizza.
So we were talking about this. This bogus video that should have been known to be bogus at the start. Like the second this came out, it came out a couple of years ago.
But the story behind
it. No man can carry a horse 3 miles home.
No. So there's some Ukrainian strongman. Decided, I'm going to pick this horse up just to prove I could pick the horse up. And to his credit, he picks up the horse. And they're saying that's not fake news. Like, that was real. The guy picked up the horse, but he walked a few steps, and there was someone out there videotaping it. But then somehow someone took that and launched it into a story that was legitimately fake news.
Yeah, that was fake news.
That it was his horse, and his horse had been bitten by
a snake.
Venomous snake, and he walked 3 miles with the horse on his back. And then we got discussing, like, how much does a horse weigh? And is it possible to find any lineage of horse that we could potentially pull that off on?
The mini horse.
And we talked about, like, mini horses.
Mm-hmm. A 70-pound mini horse.
And I thought they were, like, 70 pounds. And it turns out they're, like, 400 pounds, 500 pounds, and I was way off. Samsonite.
Yeah, but there was, apparently, people have been sending us. There's a couple out there that are tiny.
I will say, I got my buddy Adam who's on the case, and he's a smart guy.
Yeah, Adam's a smart guy.
He's a smart guy. He wouldn't waste his time with something ignorant and stupid. And he's digging up some dirt, and he's finding some horses out there that are a little bit closer to 70 pounds than what I'm being, you know, not quite 70, maybe a little bit more than that, but not like 400 or 500 pounds.
There's no horse that's 70 pounds. A doll, a horse doll, 70 pounds.
Well, a hobby horse.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It was a stupid comment. It was ignorant. And,
oh, good.
Couple of weeks ago, I guess it was, we were talking about the states. I don't know how this came up, and you said you thought there were 52 states in the union.
Yes.
52 American states, as we know.
I don't think that's that outrageous.
Well, the people believe that it is more outrageous than my 70-pound mini horse take, because we've had the poll up for about an hour. What is the dumber statement on the show? And 57% of people are saying 52 states.
I'm not buying that. That's a doctored, rigged, fake news poll.
You think the Russians are behind that?
Yes, I do.
I just assume the Russians are behind everything. Anything you don't want to believe, you just say, oh, that's obviously the Russians
are
doing
that. You've been hacked. It's fake news.
Yeah, it's got to be. Like, if you're looking at the TSN trade bait board, you're like, I don't think Matt Duchesne should be number one. The Russians hacked Frank Cervelli.
I mean, it's just part of our everyday verbiage. Like, we forget where it came from. Like, wasn't it Trump that was like, you are fake news?
You are fake news.
Yeah. To fake news
day.
CNN.
It's just every day now.
Jim Acosta. What did he call Jim Acosta? He came up with a name for him.
He's got these nicknames, but the Acosta was down by the wall or something and proved that at work he couldn't get through.
Dear Diary. Trump tweeted that out. Fake news.
Anyway.
All right. So, you know, there's a lot going on in the NHL right now. And in Anaheim, it's ugly. They are winless in 12.
Yeah.
And we were wondering, you know, what's going through the mind of Randy Carlyle? What's going through the mind of a guy like Mike Babcock when his team is in a bit of a rut? Well, we figured we'd try to reach out to a guy who's been a head coach, one of Jack Adams, been an assistant coach. He played in the league for a long time, worked at TSN on Trade Center before.
Done it all.
He's done it all. And he joins us here on Overdrive. Here is Paul McClain. How you doing, Paul?
Good, Brian. How are you guys tonight?
We're doing very, very well.
Good.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show.
What's it like in the coach's room when you've dropped 12 in a row? I don't even know if you've ever experienced something like that. But, Paul, how difficult is it? Like, just, you know what it's like. You're going in there. Nobody's probably getting the message, and you still have to deliver it. How painful is that?
Well, it can be, especially after you've done it 12 times and you've tried to, you know, bring a different message or what you're bringing. I would say it's very quiet there right now. I think he would be doing a lot of one-on-one meetings with, you know, not only his best players, but with, you know, the heart and soul guys, the Elmer, the glue guys on the team that really, you know, keep it together for you and do things the right way for you, really making sure that they're on point and they understand what they have to do. And you would focus a lot of your time on what little practice you have. I would say that you'd really be focused on your special teams, because that can really be the difference in winning and losing a game when you're in that kind of, or any game. But in this situation, those would be trying to set a priority for that day and focus on that and try to get better at that one thing and not try to fix everything at once. That's the worst thing, is to try to fix everything at once, and you can't go in and be barking and yelling, because that's not going to get you anywhere either. So it's really time for a coach to be really focused, and you really learn a lot about yourself as a coach of how you can go in and get to people and talk to people and find a solution for what's going on.
You got to think any member of that coaching staff, they got to be scared, you know what, every time their cell phone rings, wouldn't you think, when you get to that many losses?
Well, that's the nature of the beast. I mean, everyone that's on that coaching staff has been knows how it works and knows how the thing goes. When you get into those situations, it's almost, unfortunately, it could get to a point where they expect it, and that can, you know, have an effect on the job that you're doing. But I know Randy in Anaheim, he's really professional, and he really takes care of the details of the game, and he'd be really focusing on that stuff a little bit more than what's the, you know, what the speculation might be. I think he understands the speculation is out there. It's not pleasant to be there, but it's part of signing on for the job. At some point, you're going to have to go through it.
You know, Paul, we're talking about just being worried about, let's say, a manager calling, but, you know, just in your experience, and you've been in several organizations, and depending on the organization, it always seems that as the trouble starts, the more people start to be around. And I mean people above the manager. All of a sudden, the owner's kicking around. And how is it, from your perspective or the coach's perspective, to try and shield the team a little bit? Because now all of a sudden the manager is putting pressure on the coaches, and you know that above the manager, that ownership is probably having meetings with him. So it's there's multiple layers.
It used to get a little dicey when all of a sudden the owner's on the plane for the road trips,
yeah,
the manager.
Like, and everyone's got an opinion. So it's really tough to kind of manage that situation, isn't it?
Well, it makes for long conversations and really makes for long days where, you know, you're trying to find a solution. Is that really going to be the solution by giving them, like, you can't just say all the time, well, we don't get a save, or our penalty killing isn't good, our defensive game's not good enough. You can't keep saying the same thing to those people, because in a lot of cases they just understand that they won and lost. They don't really understand a 2-1-2-4 check as it morphs into a 1-2-2, or you're going to be in your neutral zone, be a 1-3-1, but, you know, it's going to start out as a 2-1-2, but it's going to morph into a 1-3-1. Like, if you talk to them in that type of language, they look at you cross-eyed, and a lot of times they have no idea what you're talking about. So sometimes the conversation is hard, because the technology or the technique or the tactics, I'm sorry, in the game, sometimes they don't understand them, and that makes that conversation hard. That conversation is hard anyway. I would always make sure that I was talking to the general manager for the most part as much as you could. And if you needed to, the owner needed to talk to you or the president of the team wanted to talk to you, you have to give them that time. But try not to keep it where you were trying to explain, you know, how the team actually plays, as opposed to saying that, you know, players, it's more about their attitude, their fitness level, or their fatigue level. Now, right now in the schedule, it's the fatigue that's a big part of it. You're getting into the middle of January, going into February, so fatigue becomes a factor with every, you know, with the players in the league coming up to the All-Star break. So there's a lot of conversation going on, but is it the solution, I think, has to come from the coach through his players.
With former NHL head coach and player Paul McLean here on Overdrive, biggest story in Toronto the past 24 hours has been Jake Gardner hearing it from the fans at home. He got booed a couple of nights ago. I don't know if you've ever been in a circumstance like that where behind the bench one of your players, you know, is hearing it either via boos or maybe the media's turning on him or what have you. Mm-hmm. But if you were in that circumstance, in that situation, how would you handle it as a head coach? How would you deal with Jake Gardner in this instance?
Well, if it's in the media, you can protect the player a little bit from the media, but a lot of times when it's the fans, that should be a motivator, shouldn't it? I mean,
like, ideally, but yeah.
I've been booed. I've been written about that you're this and you're that and you're this, but when the fans start booing, well, that's kind of really should get your attention, shouldn't it? And it should really, they're expressing their displeasure with how you're playing, and specifically it's you, that should be a real wake-up call or a motivator, whatever you want to call it. I know it was for me. You try to do something. Make sure you go out there and run into somebody. Go out there and, you know, concentrate on making a good pass. To me, it's the ultimate, I guess, way of seeing how you're playing. If the fans are cheering for you, if they're booing, you're not doing enough. You got to play better.
Well, I think a lot of the fans would agree with that. I don't think there's
It's not all one guy's fault a lot of times,
no, of
either.
Not.
But the bottom line is, if that's the reaction you're getting from the fans, they're a little bit educated in Toronto, and they've been around a long time. And there's been a lot of guys probably better than Jake Gardner that got booed by Maple Leaf fans over the years.
Well, that's true.
You know, it's
there's no denying that.
Yeah, I think it should be a motivator for the young man to come to the rink the next day and make sure that he's better.
Well, that's a good point. We'll find that out tomorrow night. Appreciate the insight. Thank you for doing this, Paul. We'll do it again down the road.
That'd be great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it. There's a former NHL head coach and player, Paul McLean. It's an interesting spin. You know, he's like, hey, fans are telling you something. Use it as a motivator. Go up. And even if it's, hey, I'm going to show it. You know, I want to win their love back. It's, I'm going to be like, here, I'm going to dig in.
I'll show you.
And then you can cheer me, and I'm just going to be like,
yeah. Yeah, but give them something to cheer about, or at least, I mean, I think getting a sense of what people were upset about yesterday and the night before, it's people want to see a secondary effort. They want to see something else than what they've been seeing.
Be a better player. The one thing that he cannot do, his next home game, if he scores a goal or something and he does like the quiet sign or the hand to the ear, that is just a cheeky move that
you're opening the door. That's the individual salute game. Like, that's what that would be, effectively. That's, screw all you guys.
If you do the quiet or just something goofy, you're asking for it.
I don't think that's in, like, no. I personally don't think he would do that.
No, I don't see it. I mean, I don't know Jake Gardner personally, but he's been here long enough.
I think he's
got an understanding of the market,
he
the fans.
It. Yeah, agreed.
His role in all this. Mm-hmm. We've got an update on international hockey, and it's not a good one. We'll tell you about that next. Wow, this is very disappointing. I'm due for a reimbursement because I had bought tickets to the 2020 World Cup of Hockey. I was in.
You were in?
And now it's been canceled. The 2020 World Cup of hockey is not going to happen. The NHLPA just issued a statement that the players are focused on finding the proper time to schedule the World Cup of Hockey within the context of an overall international hockey calendar. While we in the league have discussed the possibility of holding the next World Cup in September of 2020, we have jointly concluded that it is unrealistic to expect that preparations for the event would be completed in time. That last comment is sounds ridiculous. I mean, that's 21 months away. 20 months away, you can't figure out the World Cup of Hockey.
It just screams lockout, which annoys me.
Well, see, the line that sticks out to me is the players are focused on finding the proper time to schedule the World Cup of Hockey within the context of an overall international hockey calendar. That's the Olympics.
Yeah.
Like, that's my read on it. They want to go to the Olympics, and even with the World Cup, they still want to go. And yeah. I'm guessing the league's like, no, we're having the World Cup so that we don't go to the Olympics. Like, how is this hard to figure out? And that, I don't know. Obviously, they couldn't figure it out. So all this stuff over the last week of Bettman saying, no, I don't want to fight, and everything's all good.
I'm fighting.
This is the first, we've got to fight to the extent.
Day one of the fight.
We're 20 months out from the World Cup. They're already like, we're done. It's not
going
to happen.
Better get it going.
I mean, maybe they could revisit this in 2 weeks and they actually do figure it out. You never know, but
I doubt it.
How much disappointment is like? How disappointed are you of that?
Well, I'm disappointed that we don't have international hockey featuring the best players in the world. I am disappointed in that.
Yeah.
I don't care what it's called, the Olympics,
the
World
Cup. I mean, I like the Olympics. It's great. It's
but I want to see McDavid against Matthews for a gold medal. Like, I would like to see that. I would like to see Canada, Russia, whatever. I love international hockey, and I do think the younger players, the players of the youngest generation here, they have been handed a bad hand because, you know, we talked about it in the break. We all grew up here in Canada. We all know about Paul Henderson. We know about Gretzky to Lemieux.
Well, what about the last one where McDavid was like, I finally get to play with Sid. And what do? They
that's the stupidity of it.
The young stars.
I'm not saying the original World Cup wasn't, it was stupid. You know, the young stars, Team Europe, it's all dumb. There should be eight nations. You play and you find out who's going to win, like the old Canada Cup. But I think Connor McDavid should have the ability to have his international moment, just like Crosby, just like Gretzky, just like Lemieux, just like Bobby Orr. They all had it.
Yeah, it's a great point.
You know, and Austin Matthews and Jack Eichel should have the ability to do what the Americans did in 96. They should all have the ability to achieve something on an international level. And if the World Cup isn't going to happen and they're not going to the Olympics, then when are we going to see international hockey?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we will.
Like, the fans are the ones that get screwed here.
I agree. I think they do, but it's just, I don't know. They should be working backwards to get the CBA done and then deal with all this other stuff. Like, if that's the priority, I think the priorities are messed up. Get your NHL game in order. Escrow's high. You've got expansion coming. Like, you said this yesterday. Gary Bettman's talking to people in Seattle. Is he talking out the side of his mouth? Like, hey, we're getting a new organization coming here. Really excited. Guess what? May not be playing the year. That year.
Well, that would be a kick in the pants.
It's not a coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence that he made those, you know,
the nice comments.
The kumbaya statements in Seattle.
Right.
You know, that's the market where he knows he just an ownership group just paid, what, $600 million or $650?
Yeah, whatever
they're
it is.
They're renovating the building. They're trying to sell tickets. You can't have the commissioner come on and say, don't even buy tickets that first year. We're not even playing.
Yeah.
You know, or we're coming off a lockout or whatever.
Yeah. That's...
But, you know, there's never been any cohesiveness between these two groups. There's always some sort of animosity. There's always something that they're going to fight over. Yeah. That's business. I get it. It's their world. It's not mine. It's not my money. But I just simply, as a fan, I enjoy international hockey. And the World Cup, you got to get it rocking for it to mean something. You know, if it's fresh and it comes and goes, it's not going to hold any
it doesn't hold
significance.
Any, like, Who cares?
Nobody
who
does right
the
now.
World Cup,
but like, if you do it every 4 years, in 20 years, it'll mean something.
Well, it becomes tradition.
Hopefully, you know, it's never going to be the soccer World Cup, but if it's the only international tournament where the best on best are playing, if it's the only thing we have, it will develop into a big tournament that people care about. You know, we'll spend weeks on weeks, months, years talking about who's going to be on the team, who won't be on the team.
Oh, yeah, it'll be
if
great
there's,
for
if
us.
If there's no opportunity for that, then no one's going to care about it.
They better get it together here. There's arrogance on both sides, They've got to find a way
to get it together for us, Jamie, because as from what you guys have told me.
Now, that last lockout wasn't fun. That wasn't fun. And I asked
a lot about hockey, and if it's taken away, and we got to talk about Dregs reporting on.
Yeah, Dregs and Saravelli standing on the corner. Like, you know, Donald Fair's brother just walked in with a knapsack.
Yeah.
Remember that guy? Was it Steve Fair with the sweaters and the knapsack?
Yeah. It's painful.
Like, that, it's enough.
Well, that's why, again, like, you know, Bettman's got to be careful with what he says publicly, too. Now, maybe he doesn't care. You know, he's locked them out before, and that's his MO. And the league, we all yell and scream that people are leaving and they're not coming back. It doesn't happen.
They come back.
They all come back, and everyone comes back, and everyone's fine in the end. But don't lead people on. Don't patronize people. Don't pretend like you're not in. You know, you just want everything to be all good and no fight here, and then pick a big fight. Yeah. Then it takes two to tango. You know, the players will be involved in that, too. And, you know, we're leaping ahead here just based on one announcement about the World Cup. But
here's the thing. I feel like both sides have some really smart people involved. If you kind of sense where the end game's going to be, like, to fight to get to that end game, like, I'm not saying fast track it, but
exactly.
There's going to have to be concessions on both sides.
But it's ego, pride,
but that's what bothers me, is like, okay, hey, like, you walk into a room to get a deal done. If you're determined to get the deal done, you'll make it happen. Mm-hmm. And
well, I hope they have a plan for international hockey. That's all I'll say. You know, I don't care if it's the World Cup or the Olympics. I hope, you know, in the next 4 or 5 years, we've got a tournament where the best players in the world are playing against each other.
You know what? Yeah. We'll get into it more tomorrow.
Well, but first, we've got to get to our best bets brought to you by Proline. I'm on Detroit tonight at home against Orlando. Houston at home against Brooklyn. San Antonio and Dallas, the Battle of Texas. Throw down 20, you can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline. Get way into the game.
We will break down this World Cup of hockey stuff tomorrow with Bobby Mack, and that show will kick off
at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.